Hello everyone, welcome to All Things Relationship Podcast, a one-stop solution for all your relationship queries and questions. Here you will find everything from people's stories, experts on panel, and some great knowledge that can help you make love real and perfect. So, let's jump right in. Today we have with us Rijul Arora, who is a TEDx speaker and works heavily towards promoting digital well-being, ensuring healthy relationship between humans and technology. He avidly works in the area of technology, mental health, self-help, philanthropy and leadership when he's not engaged with his day job at Ernst & Young. So let's get started with an interesting conversation. Hi, Rijul. Welcome to All Things Relationship Podcast.
Hi, Nishant. I'm extremely grateful to you for having me here. Looking forward to a wonderful conversation today.
I'm so glad you accepted the invitation.
Thank you so much.
Looking forward to the conversation.
Yeah, me too.
Rijul, for our audience, could you please introduce yourself?
Sure, Nishant. So, hello, everyone, to all of you listening. My name is Rijul Arora. Personally, I talk a lot about digital well-being. I do these talks in which I talk about how to have a healthy relationship with technology. So I've given more than 100 plus workshops around digital well-being at platforms like TEDx and leading colleges like IITs, BITS Pilani, Delhi University, etc. So that's what I've done around digital well-being. But I'm a 24-year-old kid. I'm a 24-year-old millennial who's been on both sides of the table. I've gone through a lot of struggles related to digital well-being and relationships. I've struggled through it and I've learned from it, and though I still struggle from it. So I'm sure that all of you listening can relate to my journey, my struggles and my learning.
Thanks, Rijul. So you mentioned about relationship with digital devices and digital well-being. What do these terms signify? What do you mean by these terms?
Sure. So by digital devices, I mean all our screens, all our phones, all our laptops, our TVs, our gaming instruments. So this is what I mean by digital devices. And why this is really important and why this is significant is because we are spending most of our time on screens nowadays. And it is one of our most important relationships. So I think it's really critical to talk about this aspect. And there was this wonderful quote I had read or I had listened to from an international podcast by Tanya Godin. And she said that it's so sad that the first thing that we touch in the morning is our phones and not our partners. So I feel it's really important to talk about this or have a conversation about this specific digital devices.
Okay. So how would you identify that you are in an unhealthy relationship with the digital devices around you?
Correct. So first of all, let me make something clear. A lot of us blame tech, that tech is bad. But let me put up something up front, and I quote, technology or digital devices is neither good nor bad. It's given meaning by how we use it. And let me give an analogy to explain that. So let's say if you use a knife to cut vegetables, that's good use of it. On the other hand, if you use this knife to hurt people, that's bad use of it. So technology is similar. If you use tech to grow your life or to grow your relationship, that's good use of it. But if you use it to deteriorate your life or deteriorate your relationships, that's bad use of it. So that's how digital technologies work. And that's how you give meaning to this tech. It's about your usage of tech. So what's happening nowadays is, linking back to the question you asked, most of us have an unhealthy relationship wherein we're giving bad meaning to tech, wherein we're using it badly. And to explain some signs of unhealthy relationship, and to make things easier, I call it a formula. And the formula is LTC. Remember that. LTC. And L stands for location. Yeah, correct. Okay. LTC. L stands for location. So be very careful about the location you check your screens in. For example, I'll make things very, very clear. Let's say you're talking to someone in person, and you pick up your phone, how would that make you feel? Or how would that person feel in the moment? he would feel that you're prioritizing your phone over the conversation that you're having. So that affects the quality of relationships. And this is one example. Another example could be, let's say if you're driving a car or if you're driving, you pick up your phone. So that's like a very big risk to your life itself. And there are a plethora of examples out there wherein we have an unhealthy relationship. So idea is to be very careful about the locations where we check our screens. If you're checking it at the wrong locations, you have an unhealthy relationship with tech. Second aspect is T. Yeah.
So that is the location consideration which we should have while we are checking our screens.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Correct. Coming to the second part, which is T, and it stands for time. And there are two aspects to time. One is, what time are you checking your screens and how much time you're spending? So when I come to the first aspect, what time, if you're checking your screens first thing in the morning or last thing in the night, it's going to affect your life. So to give an example, if you're checking your screens just before you sleep, that blue light which comes from the screens affects your sleep patterns, or if it affects the quality of sleeps. So if it affects your sleeps, it affects every aspect of your life, your productivity, how you talk to your relationships, how you communicate. Because ultimately, if you're not sleeping well, you'll be groggy, you'll not be in a good mood. So it would affect every aspect of your life. And if you're checking it first thing in the morning, you're letting your tech drive your day instead of you driving your day. So this is an important parameter of what time are you checking your screens. Second is, how much time are you spending your screens? So one aspect which all of us have gone wrong is that we use tech to substitute our lives instead of supplement our lives. All of us are like using tech to communicate with people. While it's good because of the current times, but we mostly text people nowadays. But we should call up people. We should have video call whenever possible. That really helps in genuine connection. But the idea is, we're using tech to substitute our life rather than supplement our life. And to give you another example, all of our time is spent online, majority of us. And this is something that I've seen in my experience conducting workshops. So we're just using tech to substitute our life and not supplement our life. So to make these things more clear, let's say you build a relationship online, you try to convert it into offline. So that's a way you've used it to supplement your life. But if you're taking that whole relationship online itself, that's probably not good use of tech. So that's just an example of the time concept.
Okay. And the C?
Yes, correct. So C stands for content. And what I mean by that is, what are you doing online? Yes, you're spending time online, but what content are you consuming online? Is that content helping you grow, or is it deteriorating your life? For example, I personally watch a lot of self-help content, which helps me grow. I listen to a lot of stuff related to digital well-being, to relationships, which helps me grow. I follow people like Jay Shetty, Simon Sinek. And again, it's personalized. Everyone has a very different kind of flavors, things that they like. So like and follow things which helps you grow as a person and which resonates with your values. So that's the message I would like to give you. Look at things which helps you grow as a person. That are the things that you should follow online. So most of us are only looking at people. Most of us looking at people, what are they doing online? Like for example, I as a general millennial would look, just keep scrolling and look at what other people are doing. They're doing so good in life. So we would generally feel jealous. So try to replace some of this content with content that helps you grow. Self-help or anything that works for you, or anything you're passionate about. Let's say you're passionate about cricket, dancing, any sport, or let's say a particular skill set. So follow those things online and use it to grow. So LTC, location, time, content.
Okay. That is basically the what, when, and where of digital well-being.
Exactly. Bang on.
Okay. So, well, this brings in the question, when did you start your journey of digital well-being?
Correct. So I'll be really honest. I have struggled a lot and I still struggle with it, to be honest. But let me break down my journey and explain it in detail. So I'll break my journey down into three phases. Phase one is the journey when I was completely addicted to social media. And this is way back in 2017 and 2016. So I struggled with this LTC. I used to check my phone in the bathroom. I used to check my phone while talking to people. I used to check my phone everywhere and I used to spend a lot of time. I used to look at what other people are doing and feel jealous about it. So I struggled with all of these LTC components. I used to check WhatsApp first thing in the morning, last thing in the night. I used to look at what people are doing online, or used to look at what people are doing in their lives instead of focusing on myself. So I completely struggled with this LTC concept. Mm-hmm. And this had really affected my physical and mental health, to be honest. I'll be really vulnerable here. So
okay.
I decided that I need to know what is life beyond social media or life beyond tech, which is wherein my second phase comes in, wherein I went cold turkey. I just left social media. I uninstalled WhatsApp for 7 months. I uninstalled Facebook for 7 months. And when I mean uninstalled, I deleted my accounts, not deactivated.
Wow, that's a bold move.
But yeah, I would definitely not advocate for that. And I'll come to that aspect.
Okay. So then how would you suggest a person can have a healthy relationship with their digital devices, with their screens?
Correct. So that is wherein my phase two, which I was talking about. So wherein I went cold turkey, and it had a very significant impact in my life. But the impact was not due to the fact that I left social media. It was due to the fact that I left social media and I adopted a lot of good habits like gratitude, meditation and all. So that really impacted my life in terms of physical and mental health. I'll touch upon this later. But coming back to and circling back to your question, as in how can a person have a healthy relationship with tech? So the answer, and this is something that I generally follow nowadays, is something I divide into three buckets. One is moderation of screen time. Second is healthy consumption of tech. And third is healthy production. These are the three pillars I put. And I'll be happy to explain it as well. So first pillar is moderation of screen time. And the idea is that most of us are online 24/7 or connected to tech 24/7. So there are multiple and plethora of things that you can do. And I do a 2-hour workshop to actually explain it. But if I condense it, I would say it's important to know your triggers and it's important to evaluate your current tech usage. So for example, we need to identify our triggers. And to give an example, there's something called internal trigger. Let's say you're feeling bored, you're feeling anxious. What is the first thing that you do? You check your phone, right? You pick up your phone, right? So, and if you're having a bad day, you'll automatically check more screens because you want to escape from what's going on here and on your mind and focus on your screens. So that's an internal trigger example. An external trigger example is wherein your phones and screens are calling you. So an example could be a notification coming and you pick up your phone. So that's an example of external trigger at work. And the idea is to evaluate all of these triggers and remove them or make them work for you. For example, removing notifications or having only priority notifications on. So identifying your triggers and making them work for you. If you're aware of your triggers, you'll be able to handle them better. So for example, if I know that I check my phone when I'm anxious, I'll be more aware of it and I'll probably work on it and become better. And to give an example of why this is important, so an average human or an average person checks his phone 127 times in a day, and which is equivalent to, let me actually break it down more. So if you divide 127 divide by the number of hours we are awake, which is 16, the number would come to 8. So we're checking on phones 8 times every hour, which is equivalent to every 8 minutes. So every 8 minutes, we're checking our screens. That's a lot. So I want to ask, is that intentional or is that unintentional? Right.
It's can't be intentional.
Exactly. Because we are not aware of triggers. That's why we keep going back and back again. And being aware of these triggers and removing them or making it work for me has really helped improve my pickups. Wherein, and as I said, an average human picks up his phone 127 times in a day. I do it around 40 to 50 times. And this has really helped me a lot. And this is one example. But there are a lot of other techniques you could adopt. Like, for example, you could use tech to manage tech. And what I mean by that is there's something called Google Digital Wellbeing Apps, or there's something called Screen Time by Apple. So they have a lot of apps which helps you manage your screen time. To give you an example, there was an application in Google Digital Wellbeing in which if you scrolled on your social media, your social media would become bluish because they're actually tackling that infinite scroll which is there. So there's an application around that. And there are a plethora of these applications. So you could just Google Digital Wellbeing and you'll get access to a lot of these applications. And my last tip on moderation of screen time would be, and this is something that's really transformed my life. So leverage old fashioned tech instead of new fashion tech. And to give an example, I hope you can see this. And to all of you listening, Basically, what I've shown is an old-fashioned alarm clock and a landline. And the idea is that before sleeping... Yes, Nishant.
Okay. Yeah, I don't think I've seen these two devices in a long time.
Long
time. A table exactly. clock and a landline.
Correct. I'm not saying switch to it, but I would say what I do is I do something called daily digital detoxing. So I unplug from tech 1 to 2 hours before sleeping. And what I do in those time is something that's meaningful to me and something I'm not able to find time for. So I read books, I read newspapers, I introspect a lot about life. And before sleeping, I use this alarm clock to sleep. So idea is that when you sleep with your screens, you're being you're exposed to that blue light and that affects your sleep. So I've been using this alarm clock and I can say that my sleep quality has improved to a large extent. And let's say if there's an emergency, that's why I keep my screens in the other room. So if there's an emergency, people can contact me on landline. So I'm not saying switch to this landline or alarm clock. Only use it during the nighttime or whatever suits you. That's my message here. So use old-fashioned tech wherever it's better or use new fashion tech wherever it suits you or better. For example, in one of my workshops, someone found a smartwatch to be more effective because this was a way he could manage his triggers. So make your tech work for you. That's the key message I would say.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I hope that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. But I wonder if a person is checking his or her phone 8 times every hour, then there must be some reason. I think we call that the fear of missing out.
Correct.
And how do we tackle that? That Absolutely. Is something quite strong in human psyche. How Absolutely. Can we tackle that?
So that's a very valid question, Nishant. Fear of missing out is one reason, but there are multiple other reasons at work as well. Feeding our into triggers, tech products are feeding into our triggers. Tech products are also certainly hooked in, they hook us into the products as well. So basically the idea is that we all have a role in being addicted or being distracted by tech. Even tech companies have a certain role to play. Even we also have a role to play. And one of those reasons of checking our screens multiple times is something that you call FOMO. Or fear of missing out. Let me explain how do we tackle or what we mean by FOMO. Yes. So FOMO basically means, and let me put it in this way. Let's say I didn't check my phone for the last 10, 15 minutes or 8 minutes for that matter. I would think, shit, I'm missing out on something. I'm missing out on some gossip. I'm missing out on some group chat. I'm missing out on what's happening in others' life. Or I'm missing out on some important news out there. Or I'm missing out on some important work. Or some important call from my boss. So we have this fear of missing out on something. And what I would advocate for is changing this perspective from FOMO or fear of missing out to JOMO, which is joy of missing out. And let me explain that.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say you're having FOMO. Think about what you're doing right now and experience joy in it. Let's say you're just sitting in the balcony, having a hot cup of tea and observing nature. So experience joy in that moment instead of fearing, shit, I'm missing out on something. Or it could be anything. Like, let's say you're talking to an in-person relationship. Feel joy and feel connected in that relationship instead of thinking, oh, I'm missing out on something in my phone or I'm missing out on some important news. So experiencing joy in the moment instead of having that fear is something that I would advocate for. And it's a slow journey. It'll take time, to be honest.
Okay. So when you go towards JOMO, you are essentially going towards self-help, if I'm right.
Yeah.
What is the importance of self-help then in our lives? Mm-hmm. How important is it? Should everyone go towards it as an active participation?
Mm-hmm. I really resonate and I really agree with that question. So self-help and self-love is something that's really important. And there was this wonderful line I had read or I had listened to somewhere. And it said, if you don't know how to love yourself, how can you love others? And that's where the importance of self-help or self-love comes. Because the idea is that you need to learn to love yourself before you love others. And there are multiple ways in which you can do it. Do things that you love. For example, read books, read a lot of wisdom online. That could be one thing. This is my personal experience. Or introspect about life, spend time with yourself. That's important. In these scenarios wherein we're all connected online, we've just forgotten this art of being bored or being alone and spending some solitude time. So spend some time and do things which makes you feel good about yourself. It could be as small as walking barefoot in the grass, drinking some tea, or just, you know, sleeping. So do things which makes you feel good. Or it could be also things which helps you grow. For example, if you're passionate about a particular topic, read about it online or listen to podcasts like these. So listen to content that helps you grow or that resonates with you. So I feel this is something that's important. If you know how to love yourself or grow yourself, then you'll be able to give that wisdom to others or be able to be much better when you're with others and be your own self or your own authentic self when you're with others.
Okay. That makes quite a lot of sense. Okay. When you bring that into relationships, since we would be talking about relationships primarily.
Yeah, then absolutely.
Let's build a base on what's your story around relationships. What do you think of relationships around in today's age?
Correct. So do you want me to talk about my journey or my own perspective on it first?
Both works.
So, okay. First, let me talk about my journey and then my perspective on it. Because my perspective on it is linked back to my journey itself. So I would again split my journey into three parts or three phases. Phase one of my journey is wherein I had no close relationships except my family. And this was way back in school in my 11th and 12th standard. And I'll be really vulnerable and talk about it here. That was the time when I was studying for my IIT, JEE, BITS and other premier institutes and engineering colleges in general. And the mentality was that I need to clear this exam. This is the only thing that I need to chase after. And this is the goal that I have in life. So during that phase, and I'll be really honest, I was very jealous of people because I wanted to get ahead or I wanted to be number one or I wanted to really crack those competitive exams. So my whole focus was there. I wasn't investing in my relationships beyond family. Or my state was a negative competitive mindset, if you understand that. That mm-hmm. there was a competitive mindset out there that I need to be better. And it was negative in nature. I was jealous. I wanted to get ahead. I wanted to be rank one. I wanted to be ahead of others. And I'll be really vulnerable. That is something that I suffered during that phase one, during my school times, when I had no close relationship. Because I had mm-hmm. that singularity mindset that I want to crack this exam of IIT and other institutes. And I hope a lot of you listening can resonate because it's valid for other exams as well. And to a lot of school students listening, or to a lot of other people listening out there.
Yeah, that's almost crazy. Everyone out there, they gave JEE or AIPMT or exactly. some CAT exam, something or other.
Exactly. Yeah. Sure that, yes, exactly. A lot of you would resonate with that. So phase two was when I had gone to college. So I had cleared BITSAT and I went to BITS Pilani Goa. And during that phase, again, I would say, I still had that singularity mindset that I want to get the one or my future partner, or I want to get the best job. So again, I would say in the initial years of my college, I was still jealous because I still had that negative competitive mindset that I would want to get the most marks because that will help me get the best job, or I want to get the best girl out there. And I would only look at things extrinsically instead of intrinsically. So I had that real negative competitive mindset. And looking at things extrinsically instead of intrinsically. And I'm being really vulnerable here because this is something that I've really struggled with in the initial years of my college. So this was phase two wherein I still had that singularity or that negative competitive mindset. But this singularity goal changed. First, I wanted to get into IIT and the other colleges. Here, I wanted to get the best job or the best relationship based on negative competitive mindset or based on extrinsically instead of intrinsically. And when I mean extrinsically, I mean, how he or she looks instead of what they are inside, or not looking at values per se.
Okay. So those are the extrinsic and intrinsic parts of selecting a partner.
Exactly. So if I elaborate on that, this is something that I struggled through. I would look at people from an extrinsic perspective, wherein how they were doing or how they looked. So those are extrinsic parameters. So what I nowadays do is, while extrinsic is one parameter, it's important to look at people intrinsically. And what I mean that is spend time with them and get to know their values. What do they stand for? Is it honesty? Is it compassion? Do they like service work? Look at what they stand for. That's much more important because you're going to spend most of your time with that person or with any relationship for that matter. So if you want to be deeply connected with them, intrinsically makes more sense, because that's how you'll connect with them. Because if you, let's say I am honest and I like that person to be honest as well, or if I want someone from a differing view, let's say if I'm not good at cooking, if I want other person to be cooking, so I'll connect with them much more better. Instead of if I'm looking at things extrinsically, I'll not be able to connect them at a deeper level, because that'll fade away after a certain point of time. And I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. That the physical attraction is only for a limited time. Exactly. Physical appearance changes, and yes, a person changes as well. Exactly. But it is almost always to get better and get in accordance with the situation around you.
Absolutely, that's very valid. And people change, and we need to learn how to grow and how to adapt as well. That's also an important parameter, because people change over time, and you both need to, or any relationship for that matter, you need to learn to grow and adapt, because that's just the natural process. But at the same time, not losing your core identity or your core values. That's also important.
That's quite a fine line.
Exactly.
And I don't think I've met a lot of people who can manage being at the boundary.
Hmm.
Staying growth oriented and not losing their core values.
Hmm. That's definitely a struggle. I would definitely say that. But yes, so, we all learn, we all unlearn.
Yeah, we all gotta learn. And if you don't unlearn, you'll lag behind and will be irrelevant in the market.
Hmm.
Now, that can be the job market or it can be the relationships market.
Correct.
So, have you had any experience?
Phase three, if you want, I can talk about how I overcame this, like when I meant phase one, wherein I had a singularity mindset, phase two, I had a singularity mindset. And to sum it up, my perspective on relationships would be to have a holistic perspective. And this is wherein my phase mm-hmm. three comes in. So
okay.
Nowadays and during the later part of my college, I felt it's important to have a holistic perspective to life. And what I mean by that is relationships are only one part of life, because while they're important, they're definitely very important, there is a whole spectrum or an ecosystem out there. So, and I would divide that ecosystem into 4, 5, or 6 parts, depending on the person who's there. So for me, it stands for, and let me break it down. One is relationships. Uh-huh. One is health. Second is health, because health is really important to all of us. Third is professionally. Mm-hmm. What kind of goals you have professionally? What do you want to achieve? Financial goals, etc. Fourth is hobbies, pursuing your hobbies. Fifth is giving back. So I feel that it's important to have a holistic perspective to life. And what we are getting wrong, or what my perspective to relationship is, that we're putting too much pressure on relationships to make us happy, and specifically on the one relationship to make us happy. So as you can see, I talked about having a holistic perspective to life, wherein I put 6 buckets or 5 buckets, mm-hmm. and it depends on person to person. So if you see that 5 buckets are a lot, and relationships is yeah. just one part of it, and the one, or the your future wife or your future self or your future wife or your future partner, is just one part of that relationships. Because even in relationships, there are multiple relationships. Your relationship with your family, your relationship with a stranger, and with your household help, or with your screen, office. And then with your office workers. So there are a lot of relationships. So as you can see, there's only one. Your future wife or your future husband is just one part of it. So don't put too much pressure, or don't let that drive your happiness. While that's important, but don't depend solely on it, because there are so many other parameters which are there in your life. So that's the key message that I wanted to give here.
Mm-hmm. That's a really profound message. And if people understand it, then they'll really have a holistic relationship with everything and everyone around them.
Mm-hmm.
But with that, have you had any experience of yourself around relationships, finding a partner? Be it in college, master's mm-hmm. or bachelor's.
Correct. So I would say I have had a lot of relationship struggles. As I said, I am a millennial. I'm a 24-year-old millennial who struggled with digital well-being, with relationships as well. So as I told you that I have suffered through a lot of rejections in my college life. So as I told you, in the initial years of my college life, my goal was to probably get the best job or get the best relationship. So mm-hmm. I would say that I also struggled through a lot of rejections, because as I told you, I was looking at things extrinsically, not intrinsically. And that's what okay. I struggled through. I would look at people and I would just look at their looks probably. That's what I struggled through. I wouldn't spend time with them and get to know them. So that is, those rejections really helped me a lot, to be honest. I'm really glad that those rejections happened. And they made me realize that it's important to look at things intrinsically. So nowadays, and in the later part of my college days, I actually spend time with people. I get to know them for a couple of years and I get to know their values. And I try to align with that. Or I try to, that is what is core to that relationship. Because I think it's important to remember this. Remember TV, time and value. Spend time with that person and get to know their values. Because ultimately, that's the core of relationship. So TV, remember that. Time and value. Mm-hmm. And those rejections really helped me realize that. So I'm really grateful that those rejections happened.
Okay. So do you think this could be a reason why relationships nowadays are not as stable mm-hmm. or long lasting when mm-hmm. we compare it with the relationships there were in older generation, people born in maybe 1970s or 80s?
It could be one of the reasons, but I feel there are a plethora of reasons because life has really, really evolved. And there are multiple and paramount factors which have come in. So let me talk about two more factors which could be at role here. And there are multiple factors, as I said. So one is, there was this wonderful video which had gone viral by Simon Sinek. I'm not sure if you've heard of it. He talked about this factor of instant gratification instead of delayed gratification. So as a generation, we're all looking for instant gratification. That we want happiness, or we want just, we don't want to spend too much time and we get gratification from that, or we get happiness from that. Let's say you want the best job wherein you'll spend a lot of time there, but that's going to provide you instant gratification, but that's going to have a very bad effect on your health. So look at delayed gratification. That's more important. And that's takes a lot of patience, which we're probably losing as a generation. So do check out his video on instant gratification versus delayed gratification, because I feel he's put it very, very nicely. And that's one more reason I believe has caused relationships to suffer. And second is the role of digital technologies, which I really talk about on a day-to-day basis. And as I said, it's all about how you use those tech. Tech is neither good nor bad, but it's given meaning by how we use it. So some of us are not probably using that tech in a good way. So to give an example, most of us are just texting online or looking at flings online. So we're probably not using that tech in a good way. And that's something that has probably also contributed to relationship suffering. And again, it's not tech to blame, it's our usage of tech to blame. Because if you look at the flip side, digital technologies has provided us connections all around the world. If I want, I can really find people who align with my values, which I couldn't probably earlier, because I have, with this digital technologies, I can access people from all around the world. I can get to know people from all around the world. So that's the flip side of it. But again, it's all about how you use that tool.
Yeah, that's true. So could you touch on some of the positive aspects, how the technology has allowed relationships to get better in today's times?
Mm-hmm. Correct. So I would say, specifically linking back to COVID-19, because this is something that a lot of us could relate to, I feel digital technologies have played a very, very good role. So when this is a time when we're not able to meet each other, but video calling or all of these digital technologies like Zoom, Microsoft Teams, and other communication collaboration platforms have played a really great role. I'm able to connect with you right now. That's a very good example. We're able to have this recording of the podcast because of these digital tech. We're able to have this vulnerable conversation. We're able to have this wonderful conversation today because of this digital tech. Families are able to connect because of this digital tech. And there are a plethora of examples. Even remote workers, we're able to work because of this digital tech, remote working. And there's something called telemedicine. I'll give you just a lot of use cases. So in telemedicine, people are able to consult doctors online without going there. So this digital technology has just transformed every aspect of our life. And even relationships, as I talked about, we're able to connect because of video call, which is a very good meme.
True.
But again, there's a very fine line between, not a fine line, but I would say it depends on how you use it. For example, if you're using only tech to text, that's probably not a good use, because that's something that's not going to lead to a meaningful conversation. It might lead to a meaningful conversation, but it not might not lead to a meaningful relationship. That's very important, because it's important to convert those online relationships to offline or to a higher form of communication. So if you're texting someone, convert that to a call, because, or convert that to a video call, because when you're texting, you have time to think about what to reply. But when you're calling, when you're video calling, when you're meeting people, your body language, and you have to reply instantly, all your senses come into action. So let's say, for example, if I'm meeting you, my body language, my non-verbal cues, my verbal cues, that is something that's really, really important for a relationship, which is something that can't be done in a text. So which is why I say, start, if you're starting with a text, that's okay. But try to convert that offline, that to convert that online relationship into an offline relationship. That's something that's very pivotal.
That's a really important aspect of having relationships with humans.
Exactly.
Because you need to understand the human more. And only when you understand a human will you be able to trust them.
Exactly. Being human in a digital world.
Yeah. A really tough task. Especially with GPT-3 out there. I hope you did get some news around that. So yeah, okay. If we circle back to the relationships thing, what was your understanding of relationships as you were growing, as you were a youngster? You would have heard about relationships around your house, how your family members view relationships as, or your friend circle would view relationships as. How it shaped your perspective of relationships?
Correct. So I would say there are two perspectives which I could put here. One which I would say is something called transactional versus transformational relationships. So a lot of us look at relationships in terms of transactions, that I would only want to connect with you because I want something from you. There's a transaction in place. Let's say I want to talk with you because I want to leverage your network, or I want to talk to you because I want to get something done, or I want something from you. So this is a transactional relationship and something that's not going to last long. But it's important that we have a transformational relationship wherein I don't want anything out of you. I would just come to relationships so that I could serve. That should be the ulterior motive, wherein I serve you. And in that sense, you'll also want to do that, because as humans, we want to be receptive. So I feel it's important to have transformational relationships instead of transactional relationships, which is something that I've probably seen probably happening around my own or around my own society. And it's something that I also struggle with, to be honest. But the idea is to have transformational instead of transactional relationships. And second is the typical thing that we all have seen of that singularity route, that getting the one, getting to the best college, getting that perfect wife or perfect husband, getting that perfect job. So I think those are something that's rooted in our society. But again, it's not society to blame, to be honest. It's just we can always choose how to react to situations. That's something that's really pivotal. And one more key idea which I would like to give is, it's all about making relationships work. And let me ask you a question to all of you thinking and listening. So as per you, what percentage of responsibility do you have to make any relationship work? Let's say there's a relationship between you and your friend or you and your partner. What percentage of responsibility do you have? Just pause and think about it. Or what do you think, Nishant?
I personally prefer a 60-40 relationship where I am ready to put in the 60% and I expect 40% of their efforts.
Exactly. I agree. So that's something that a lot of us think. And that's something that I also struggle with. But what I would say, and something that I read, and this blew my mind away, answer should be 100% zero. Idea is to take personal ownership, right? You always know, you can always choose how to react. It's important to take 100% ownership of your relationship. Let's say you're in a fight, you can always go and say sorry. So that's how you take 100% control of your relationship. It's important to take personal ownership in life generally. And this is a concept that's valid in life everywhere. So put 100% responsibility of everything that's happening. And to specifically talk about relationships, as I told, if you've gone through a fight, you can always go and say sorry, and you can always go and mend things. So that's how you're putting in your 100%. I hope that makes sense.
Personal ownership is a really important concept. But when you talk about relationship between two people, then if one person is doing 100% and expecting zero, then would it not be a one-sided relationship?
Correct. So that's not what I meant exactly. I meant what percentage of responsibility do you have to make relationships work? So one aspect is that there's something called reciprocity. If you're putting in, the other person would definitely put in the efforts.
Exactly.
That's one thing. But I'm not saying that, okay, persons, probably I might have put it wrong or perception is not right. Persistence doesn't work in relationships. Absolutely not. So this is something that I've struggled with because in life, generally persistence works. But if you know relationships are not, if you know that a relationship is not working, that he or she does not want it, don't be persistent, because it is a two-way route in the sense that both of you have to have the yes in the relationship, that you want to build it. If there's a no and you're still putting in 100% effort, that does not make sense. But if you have a yes, if you know that he or she also wants to invest in that relationship, then you have to take 100% ownership. I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes much more sense now.
Because I've struggled through it. Like, as I told you, I faced a lot of rejections. And in one of those rejections, there was a definite no from the other end, but I'm still putting in 100%. But because I believe persistence is the key to everything, but it's not in relationships, especially if it's a no. It's just like a Bollywood movie happening all over again.
Okay.
But a Bollywood movie doesn't happen in real life sometimes. Or most of the times.
Yeah, most of the times. There are movies for a reason. Just fantasies.
Fantasies, bang on. And that's something that I feel it's important to, you know, take it with a pinch of salt, because that's not reality. Reality is very different. And relationships take time, effort, values.
Patience.
A lot of parameters.
And a lot of depth. In terms that you should be able to understand that maybe the other person does not mean what he's saying or what she's saying. It's just a momentary outburst.
And just coming back to that 100% point again. So I want to say that once that relationship has started, you should have that perception that you would always put your 100%. You would also have 100% ownership to make it work no matter what. Because when you have that mindset in relationships and in life, you'll succeed. And that relationship would also succeed. And if that person would see that, that's something that's very pivotal. And it has to be complemented by the love languages. And I'm sure that you've heard of it, the 5 love languages, which play a very, very critical role in building relationships. You need to know how to talk in their language. So for example, let me give an analogy to explain it. I'm talking in Spanish and you're talking in English. We can't communicate, right? Because I'm not able to understand your language and you're not able to understand my language. So that's how it works with love languages as well. If I understand your love language, and if I communicate that in that love language, that'll help. So for example, I know you know Spanish, and if I communicate in Spanish, then only can we connect. Similar to love languages. So if you talk about love language, if I know that you love gifts and I give you gifts, that makes sense. But let's say you love quality time and I give you gifts, you won't love it, right? Because we're communicating in different languages. So that's really, really important. And that should be complemented by the personal ownership I talked about.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. Having a communication in a way you both understand is a basic building block for any relationship, not alone a romantic one. So with that, Rijal, if I ask you, which is one thing that you feel you should have done differently when you were young? What would it be?
My answer to this question would be that I'm a person who believes in the power of now. I really believe that I wouldn't change my life or change any particular instance, because I feel each and everything that happened really shaped me up as a person. For example, I talked about rejections. While after an year or after a couple of months, I would have thought that that rejection might not have happened. But if I look at it from a longer term perspective, like after 4-5 years, I really feel that has played a very pivotal role in my life. That I now understand the value of relationships and to look at things intrinsically instead of extrinsically. So my thing is, or my key message is, whatever has happened to me in the past has really shaped me as a person. And I would never change what has happened in the past.
Okay.
I believe in the power of now. And to just put one more thing here. So the present is called the present for a reason. So present means gift, right? So believe in the power of the gift you have right now. And the past and the future are called for a reason. Past has gone. Learn from it. That's okay. Learn from it. Grow from it. But you can't change it. And future has not happened. But so think about it. Plan for it if you can. But present is called for a reason. Make the most of it. Make it a gift.
Okay. So
that's
why
I asked. Yeah. And that's what I try to achieve, to be honest. But yes, I also get those thoughts of probably I could have changed this thing. But if I look at it from a longer term perspective, as I said, I really love the fact that rejection happened. It really
pushed you in the right direction. direction of growth.
Exactly.
So, okay, if I put the question in a different format, what would you advise your 16-year-old self for the upcoming life?
Upcoming life. Okay, that's a very good question. And if I would advise them, I would tell them, learn more about holistic perspective to life. Have a holistic perspective to life. As I talked about, the fact that most of us have a very singularity concept in mind, that I want the one, my own, the one best partner or the best job. Don't have that singularity mind, have that holistic perspective or have that balanced perspective, that this is just one parameter to life, but there are multitude of other parameters working as well. Your health, which is of the most importance, your physical and mental health, your relationships, your professional growth, your hobbies, your giving back to society, and a lot of other parameters. So I feel having a holistic perspective is something that's very, very important to life. And that's what I would advise to my 16-year-old self.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Rijal. It's actually a really insightful conversation that we have.
Yes. And what my call to action would be, so
yeah,
my concluding thoughts would be two things. One is, there was this wonderful quote, I don't remember by whom. So the quote is, you're the average of the five people you spend your most time with. So be very careful about your relationships as well. So that's really important. Look at things intrinsically instead of extrinsically. Look at time and values, because ultimately you're the average of the five people you spend your most time with. And second, my second call to action would be, and I live by this quote on a day-to-day basis, and the quote is by Annie Dillard, and I quote, "How we spend our days is, of course, how we spend our lives." And let me repeat that.
Yeah.
How we spend our days is, of course, how we spend our lives. So in terms of digital well-being, do you want to spend one third of your days on tech, or do you want to be connected to tech 24/7? Rather, use that time to live and feel life. Because believe me, when you're on your deathbed, you won't remember applying filters to your photos, or you won't remember unhealthy relationships. You would rather remember those moments you spent outside tech, like spending time, quality time with your family, or wherein you use tech to grow yourself, consuming self-help content. Those are the times that you would remember. Thus, I feel that the time has come for each and every one of us listening to this podcast today to open our eyes to a world that does not only look at screens, but to the beauty around us and to the relationships around us, and to spend time with them, because that's where the real magic happens.
Wow, that's way too insightful and deep for a uncared conversation or a daily conversation. I'm sure the audience will learn a lot from this.
Feel free to reach out. Yeah.
Yeah, please share. How may the audience reach out to you?
Sure. So we'll post my social media handles on the description box. I'm sure you can reach out to me there. I'm really passionate about digital well-being and relationships, so I'll be happy to help out in whatever capacity I can, because I really believe in the power of service and being of service to society.
That's really great. Thanks, Ajay.